Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, what's up everyone? My name is Jed and you're listening to Talking Records, a podcast which aims to round up everything we can about an album and put it in one place. We also like to discuss how we found these records and dive into the tracks a bit. This is a collection of information, stories, and reactions by super huge music fans. Today, I'm joined by my friend and bandmate for about a month, Adam Ape. How's it going, Adam?
Not bad. Good to be on.
Coming to us live from inside your van.
Yep.
Is that a fire extinguisher behind you?
Yeah. So this is actually like my uncle's construction van. And it's full of, because I'm moving, so there's like a couch and a mattress back there right now.
Nice. Nice. Yep. Well, I'll totally understand if you stretch out on that couch later and you're... Adam, before we get into the record today, you run, organize, book, play, everything, a DIY space here in our area. Tell us a little bit more about Apeland. Tell us what you're doing over there.
All right. Do me a favor and go like Apeland Productions on Facebook and Apeland _ shows on Instagram. I'm a DIY promoter who's booking bands from all over, anywhere. I give just about anybody a shot to play and just trying to bring local music and not cover bands and original music out to the world. So look at them. We got some t-shirts for sale and stuff that say I support local music on the back of them. And your money literally goes to paying the rent of the building that I'm putting shows in. So it is very much supporting local music. And yeah, that's about it.
And that's awesome, Adam. I love what you've been doing over there at Apeland. I mean, it does feel like a step back in time. I mean, it's a great place to play. Great people go there. It attracts wonderful bands. The things you are doing are amazing. And I will pump you up a little bit. You received a very nice compliment from Mr. Toby Jegg a while back, who didn't say it was Gilman, but compared it to that vibe of Gilman Street, which I was like, absolutely, this is like,
yeah, that was,
it's like a Gilman Street. It's a more open and welcoming Gilman Street.
And I was like, oh man, like, oh, thank you so much. So yeah, thank you, Toby, for that.
Make sure you check out the Talking Records podcast on all social media platforms. We can be found by... Okay, seriously. Is there any real point in saying this? Please rate and subscribe. Hit the bell for notifications. Has anyone really ever done this as if the idea hadn't occurred until someone told them to do it? Please. If you want to support Talking Records, please listen to the show. If you really want to support the podcast, tell a friend. Tell two friends. We're not going to ask you for money in exchange for a Patreon or run obnoxious ads for the first 20 minutes of the podcast. We simply ask that you support the show by spreading it around and interacting with us on social media, because that's really what it's about, connecting over great music and focusing on a passion we all share. Thank you so much for your support. All right, let's get on with it. Welcome to the show, dude. I'm excited to talk with you today about Black Flag's debut full-length, Damaged.
Yes, sir.
Damaged was released on SST Records on December 5th, 1981. The album had been recorded that October at Unicorn Studios in West Hollywood. The band actually spent time living on the other side of the building where the studio was housed. As was common for SST releases, Glenn Lockett, or Spot, co-produced the record along with the band. He picked up the nickname writing freelance album reviews and had one time had been bassist for the pre-Black Flag band Panic with the guitarist Greg Ginn. Have you ever heard Panic, Adam?
I have not.
I haven't either. I was going to try to check him out. But
yeah, I was going to say, I'll have to check him out. I didn't know that they had another project.
I just want to hear if like Greg still plays guitar the same way in all his other bands that he does.
Yeah,
Black Flag, you know.
Didn't he have a band Jam Bang or something like that for a while? And like he's had a few out there guitar style bands.
Yeah, some sort of like punk jazz thing.
Yeah.
Plans for the follow up to the band's first EP, Jealous Again, had stalled a few times as vocalists Keith Morris, Ron Reyes, and Des Cadena all came and went. Cadena would stick with the band, moving to rhythm guitar, when his voice just couldn't stand the constant touring. Black Flag finally secured State of Alert and DC native Henry Rollins as vocalist. And have you heard some of those like cool demos that they've done with those various vocals for songs for this record?
Yeah, I think I heard some of the quick demos where it was before Henry was singing, right?
Yeah. I joined Black Flag by showing up at an audition in New York City in the summer of 1981, Rollins told Brendan Mullen and Mark Spitz in the book We Got the Neutron Bomb. The first days were a jolt because they were living hard and low to the ground, and I had no experience like that before. It was a bend in the road, as they say. I'd worked hard all my short life at multiple jobs. I thought I was quite the hardworking taskmaster type. At a rehearsal space in New York called Mikasa, the band ran through Police Story and then went through their whole set list twice. The band asked him to join. Rollins joined the band's tour as a roadie, practicing and learning the songs during sound checks and even taking some of the encores.
Yeah, I'd heard various stories of like, you know, him like, yeah, I just hopped on for a few songs and encores and like, that's how I got in the band. And I never really knew how it actually went down. So that kind of makes sense where you hear the, oh yeah, this guy just hopped on stage for the last few songs. And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Just thrown into the fire. And I guess he joined like only weeks before recording began for this record. So it was like really thrown into the fire. I guess like the backing tracks were recorded before Rollins had joined the band. And like we were saying, they had recorded, you know, with some of the other vocalists. You can actually hear those. I think there's like a damaged reissue or something on that's been released digitally where you can actually hear a bunch of those tracks with them on vocals, which is pretty cool. It's fun to compare those. Yeah, Rollins just kind of came in and laid down the vocals with the tracks already done. So,
oh, yeah.
The producer, engineer Spot, wasn't too sure about the lineup changes. He felt the band's sound was ruined by the two-guitar approach. He felt the earlier versions of the songs were cleaner and more focused. Ginn, who played an Ampeg Dan Armstrong Lucite throughout most of his time with Black Flag, was looking for a more live lo-fi sound. There was very little stereo separation between the guitars, and Spot felt it sounded too muddy. I mean, Damaged has a distinct sound.
I was going to say, it is a little muddy, but I would just call it like it just sounds raw and like it should be. Like, I don't know, it's just the fucking perfect sound for that record. Where yeah. it just rips into it and it's just raw as shit. And you're like, yeah, let's go.
It has to be that way, though. Like, if it was too clean and glossy, like Henry Rollins' vocal would just, I don't know, it would just sound weird. Maybe it's because this is the only way I've heard this record, but
it would sound awful
if it was clean.
I feel the same way. Like, it just needs that rawness and that power. Stealing from Iggy, it needs that raw power, you know?
Yeah, it's got it. And like I said, it's definitely a record that, you know, when a Damaged song comes on, if I'm shuffling through Spotify, you know, and I know immediately. It's from Damage. You know, like some songs, you're like, oh, what album is this from? You know, like all the like the newer punk rock that's done on computers and stuff.
Yeah.
But some of these old records, you know immediately what it is.
Definitely.
Op Ivy's another one. Like the minute you hear that guitar, like screechy guitar, you're like, oh yeah. According to Ginn in NME Magazine, most of the productions that are being done are by people who want you to hear every detail of the recording, who want the listener to dissect the sound. To clean up the recording, you have to sacrifice all the original feeling. So I get that. The nearly complete version of Damaged with Dez doing vocal duties was recorded at Golden Edge Studios. This session is where the tracks for the six-pack EP came from. So apparently, the band had a distribution deal with Unicorn, which was associated with MCA Records. However, when MCA president Al Bergamo heard the album, he was not impressed. He called the album anti-parent and refused to distribute the record with the MCA logo on it.
Damn.
Imagine that, you get this thing recorded and the president's like, nah, nope. Yeah. Apparently 25,000 copies were just sitting at the pressing plant. And so, I don't know if you've heard the story, Adam, members of the band headed to the plant and covered all the MCA logos with stickers that read, "As a parent, I found it anti-parent record." I found it an anti-parent record. According to Michael Azarad in Our Band Could Be Your Life, SST ended up distributing Damaged on its own. As a result, Unicorn filed a lawsuit against Black Flag and SST, claiming breach of contract. Black Flag were suddenly enjoined from recording any more records under their own name. So can you believe that? Like, wouldn't put out the record and then sued them for putting out the record on their own.
Sounds like a record company to me.
Yeah. I mean, those are the kinds of horror stories that you have to share with people that are like, yeah, I'm considering going with a major, man. You know?
Yeah. Think I'm going to sign the Victory. Go away.
Yeah. The legal dispute between Black Flag and Unicorn tied the band up for almost 2 years, during which time they released Everything Went Black, a double album of pre-Rollins outtakes under the names of the individual musicians and vocalists on the record. Yeah, they just had to like wait out this fledgling Unicorn label, which eventually went into such deep debt that they had to close up shop, and Black Flag was eventually free to move on. But what a nightmare.
Yeah, that would not be fun, especially with sitting on such a killer record where you're like, I just want to get this out, probably. And they're like, no.
I imagine it was a nightmare for like guys like Greg. Some of these songs were pretty old by the time they even got around to recording them. And then the record gets tied up and they're busy dealing with that. I mean, by the time they're finally able to, I don't know, like focus on the record and promote it and do all that stuff. I mean, some of these songs are by now like 5-6 years old.
This is true, yeah.
I bet you no one in the band at this time probably looks back on this record, but like happy feelings, because yeah. it just seems like a nightmare. I mean, we as fans love it because we get to listen to it and hear it, but we didn't have to go through like the nightmare of getting it out.
That's probably why they dropped like My War and Slip It In pretty quickly after, you know, with it. They're like, all right, we're done with these.
And it had already moved on by then to like not a newer sound, but I mean, by the time My War and Slip It In, it's not the same approach that
definitely
went into these Damaged tracks. I mean, understandably, they were pretty much a different band.
Yeah, you got a whole new front man who's like an absolute maniac basically at that point in time, you know, fucking screaming in people's faces, punching people, hitting people with mic stands, going nuts and getting all heavy and weird with it. And you know, you got to kind of go with your front man and write stuff to fit what goes with that, because that's what's working.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it on the record, recorded, you know, kind of over a period of time. Songs had been around a long time. They finally got some tracks down. They finally got a vocalist secured. He got his part done and then off, you know, got tied up for a while and then finally got the record out. So that's that story. Adam, I want to hear your story. How did you discover Black Flag? How did you get into Damaged?
So super weird and random, being I'm only 32. So when I was like, I think like 14 or 15, like I had listened to punk. And, you know, I'd heard Black Flag songs, but never really was into them. So the Misfits did this Fiend Fest tour all the time. And at that time, the Misfits lineup was Robo, Dez, and Jerry. So they actually opened with Rise Above, and everybody went fucking nuts. And, like, I had heard the song before again, but, like, I'm a teen in the early 2000s. Like, the internet existed, but it wasn't trustworthy for band names. So you didn't really know. Sure. Who anyone was, and like just through talking to people found out that it was Black Flag, and I'm like, fuck yeah. So I literally grabbed Damaged because Rise Above is the song on it, and was like, holy shit, this whole record is just absolutely amazing. And then like a few months later, I was in a band at a time. We started covering Six Pack. I was like, yo, let's do this song. It's pretty friggin' epic and awesome. And I feel like it'd be a good cover. And yeah, it's just always been like pretty much since I was a teenager and discovered it, just one of my all-time favorite records. Like it just rips from cover to cover. It's just awesome. There's very few albums that I can say that, like, you know, I'll put it on and listen to the whole thing, and like even like the end of it and stuff where it gets a little slower, like whatever, man, you're just ending your time. It's great.
Yeah, it's part of the experience. You got any favorite tracks on here?
Six Pack, obviously. Spray Paint is awesome. I was, you know, kind of big into graffiti for a period in my life, so that was good. And I mean, Rise Above is great. I mean, the whole freaking album, Depression, like it's a perfect, like, to me, at my point in time, like that something for your teen punk angst. Like, it's songs about, you know, being depressed, going out partying, hating how everybody's just sitting around watching TV, and like it's just, you know, it was like my life at the time. Like, it was like somebody put my life on a record. So
disgruntled teen. I think a lot of people related to that. Yeah, there's a lot of just raw emotion on here.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, it was, you know, getting into punk and then tracing it backwards. I mean, I'm the kind of person who, when I get into something, man, I got to know everything about it. I got to go back. I got to go find out who did it first.
Yeah,
Like all that stuff, you know? And so when I got into punk in the early 90s, you know, I had known about the Ramones and the Clash and stuff like that from growing up in a household where my parents listened to that kind of stuff. And, you know, I discovered Bad Brains and Minor Threat through, you know, looking at who these bands that I was getting into were influenced by. And of course, Black Flag. And one of the first things for me was those iconic black bars, that logo.
Yeah.
I saw that and I was just like, that's cool. Like, that's so simple, but it's so cool.
It is. I got a tattooed on my arm in the shape of the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah. And, you know, I learned really quickly that Henry Rollins, who I'd seen, you know, I knew who Henry Rollins was, but I didn't realize he was the singer of Black Flag back, you know, in the early 90s. I just thought he was that guy on MTV screaming about being a liar. And, you know, being the muscular dude on TV. He's always on TV. I don't know why. But, I wasn't really into them until I got into college. And that's when I really kind of got to listen to a little bit more of their music. I had a friend who was obsessed with Black Flag, and, you know, basically by hanging out with her, I naturally fell into listening to a lot of Black Flag music. She burned a CD of Damaged and a bunch of her pre-Rollins favorites, and I just loved all of it. I mean, it didn't really even matter to me that there was different singers singing at different times. It was more about, you know, the music. And but, you know, it was those dark and heavy Rollins tunes that really kind of drew me in. And he was such an imposing figure, like you were saying, like leaning over the crowd,
like he just
in people's faces,
this maniac on stage where you're like, you see the, you know, live videos of it and you're like, what this dude is nuts. He's leaning all crazy and just getting into it. And he's awesome
in those little black shorts.
Exactly. We're wearing some like super short shorts and that's it, and you know, let's fucking go.
He was just so passionate. And man, I don't know about you, but anytime someone is super, super passionate about something, I can't help like being into it. Like, if someone is like really, really into something and they're putting it all out there, I have no choice but to applaud them and support it. You know, it might not sometimes be something I'm totally into, but I'm like, wow, that person is really into this. I'm going to pay attention to what it is.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. It just draws you in, like just their emotion pulls in your emotion kind of thing. And you're like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just his Ron's raw delivery with Jin's like total clusterfuck of notes on guitar.
Yes.
It was so interesting to me. I remember listening to this music and being like, what is going on?
And then you see like live videos and like it's never exactly the same, like little riffs change here. I mean, it could be even be like a main riff kind of thing. And it's still like that little riff in Rise Above, like that. I've heard him play that like three different ways live. Like it's just awesome. And it just, you know, it's one of those, you're going with what you feel and that's what fits. And it's rad. as much as him kind of being a douche about the Black Flag name in today's society, like he was an integral part of the band, and like he definitely made it what it was. So
absolutely. Well, Adam, what do you say we dive into these tracks a little bit?
Definitely.
All right, so the record starts off with Rise Above. The song starts with that amazing feedback, and then the drums kick in, and then it's like, oh,
yes,
man.
Yes, and just that.
The descending line.
Awesome opening out fucking song for an album. Like, it just.
I mean, if that doesn't get you pumped up.
Yeah. Drives right in off the top, just that. And you're just, yeah, let's go. What is this? Oh man.
Dude, if I was like a wrestler or a professional baseball player, that would be my intro music. Like, I'd be walking up to the plate.
I'm honestly surprised that a professional wrestler hasn't done that, because that is an opening, just, yeah, let's go song.
It just commands your attention, the way it's like just rips in with like that grinding downward, and you're like, it's like the sensation of falling, you know, and then you're like off to the races with this amazing song.
Definitely.
I learned that the version you hear on the album was intended for a single the band was going to release before the album came out. During the damaged sessions, Black Flag recorded a new version of Rise Above, but the band didn't like it. They didn't feel like it topped the original that they had done, and so they went with that first one that they had recorded. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that is real. I mean, it's hard to top it. It's a fucking epic song.
And how many bands have you heard cover this song?
Lots. Again, that's how I first heard it, was the friggin' Misfits cover. It's another huge name band, and they're even covering Black Flag. So
right. Yeah, it's just so anthemic. I mean, it's a great song to sing along to. I mean, when you see it live, I mean, you have no choice but to like be jumping up in the air singing it along.
Oh, yeah.
Ron sings, "We are tired of your abuse. Try to stop us. It's no use. Rise above." And it's simply a call to, you know, rise above all the frustrations of life that come in the form of suppression, bullying, ignorance, anger, you know, a lot of the themes of this record. And it's just such a relatable song. You know, as we've all had moments of realizing that there's just nothing you can do about a situation other than just rise above it, you know, move on, leave it in the dust, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't change people's twisted notions or confront every selfish jerk I come across. All I can do is shake it off, man. Take the high road. You know, I can only control me.
Yeah.
Can't control the people. I'm gonna rise above. Great way to start the record, and goes into Spray Paint.
I was literally at that point in time, you know, I was an angsty teenager running around graffitiing walls and shit. So to just have a song rip into literally talking about what we were doing, running around, breaking shit and doing what we wanted and writing our message. I'm like, what? This dude literally, it's like, isn't it? I think it's only like 30 seconds, 20 seconds. Yeah. Like, not a long song, but it just instantly, I was like, yeah, spray paint the wall. Like, yes, that's what we're doing. Yes.
Is he encouraging me to do this? All right. Yeah, it's definitely a song about expression. I mean, Rollins sings at one point, "It feels good to say what I want. It feels good to knock things down. It feels good to see the disgust in their eyes." And it's just such an antisocial, like a proud antisocial kind of jam. And I just, it's so great.
Yeah, I'm a degenerate and I'm totally fine with it. And fuck you.
I just feel like it's a song where he's just seeking freedom from all that. You know, he just wants to express himself, live the life he wants instead of conforming to a norm, or, you know, I don't know, just to go against the perceived regular, you know, normal way of doing things, I guess.
Definitely.
I love that it's only 30 seconds. I love that they took it and they put it on that Fat Records comp, short music for short.
Yes.
It's like, if we're going to do this, we have to have a few of these old 30-second jams on here. Because a lot of the songs on that comp are new, but I love that they pulled in some of these classic, old, short, older. They're not old. Older,
well,
short
well,
songs.
Well, now they're old, but I mean, now that comp is old, so.
Is right. That's right.
It's kind of wild to think, honestly, that, you know, that's almost 50 years ago this album came out, right?
Yeah.
1981 or something, right?
So, you know, I've seen 81, I've seen 82, 80. I mean, it was so tied up. Red tape.
Literally coming up on 50 years of this album being our 40 years. I suck at math. 40 years. My bad. So 40 years, like, and it still holds up is what, like, I feel like even kids like nowadays that are getting into it are having the same emotions towards the music. Like, it just, it's one of those just timeless. It just holds up.
Yeah. With great songs like Rise Above and Spray Paint kicking it off, we have the next song, Six Pack. This song starts off with that classic chunky bass and drum intro, and then the guitar comes in. I mean, that's such a memorable introduction.
Yes, it's just so good to just...
Everybody knows
just it. Just build it up into it, and then you're just ripping into it. And I mean, that first line is kind of like what sucked me into the song, because, like, at the time, I'm a broke teenager, and he just comes in, $25 in a six-pack to my name. And I'm like, hey, dude, it's me. I got 25 bucks in a six-pack, and that's it.
Yeah. That's all I got. You know, obviously it's a song in jest. It's lampooning Americans, you know, who do nothing but drink cheap beer and watch trashy television. But at the same time, it's like, for a lot of us, it's like, yeah, but that was my life for a little while.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to be that. And we don't look on it with the greatest satisfaction. But, like, that was a place and time, and it was real.
Been there, done that. Ate ramen for dinner every night for a week. Yeah. It's like, you know. Yeah, you know, the six-pack of beer reigns supreme in all areas of life. It's just, you know, I love it. It's like, you know, better than a girlfriend, better than having money.
Yeah. That is a great line, though, for, like, you know, the lampooning it of the, my girlfriend asked me which one I like better. I hope the answer don't upset her. Like, that's fucking great. That's great lyrics right there.
Yeah. So good. I also love how there's a point where Henry starts singing, you know, kind of like Beyond the I Got a Six Pack kind of spoken word part, and the song just totally switches tempos. Like, one of the things that, like, people don't realize maybe about Black Flag, I mean, people like you and I do, and people who are huge fans, people are probably listening to this podcast know this, but they did a lot of, like, really cool, like, time stuff, like tempo changes.
Definitely.
Like, stop on a dime and go
in
another direction.
Like, weird amounts of measures, like learning Black Flag songs, you're like, wait, they only did three for this and not four, like, you know, like My War, songs like that, where it throws you off as a musician when you're trying to listen and play it. You're like, oh man, that never really, what, all right, yeah.
These songs are a lot harder to play than I think people realize.
Yeah, it sounds like that basic punk rock, but, like, it's not your straight up, like, it sounds like you're straight up 4-4, but it's not always your just straight up 4-4 at all.
Yeah. And then especially beyond this record, like you were saying, My War and Slip It In, and then beyond it gets even crazier. But anyway, I thought that was something worth noting. I also think it's worth noting that to promote the damaged album in the United States, Unicorn Records had Black Flag enter the studio and re-record the song for the EP in March of 82 with their then new drummer, Emil Johnson. The EP version features a slower tempo and hand claps. The band again recorded the song at the request of Alex Cox for the 1984 cult classic film Repo Man and the soundtrack that went with it. Each version of the song lyrically references different TV shows from the area, which I think is neat. I love it when bands do that.
Definitely.
The last thing of note is the Beastie Boys have a great punk rock tune called Heart Attack Man off of Ill Communication. And as the song comes to an end, someone yells, "Ah, what do we know about partying or anything?"
Yeah.
And that comes from this song, and I always love that.
Super funny, random that you brought that up. Just also a tidbit about my high school band that covered Six Pack. At one point, me and my guitarist got my bassist to learn Heart Attack Man and told him that we wrote it. And he had no clue it was a Beastie Boys song for like a month of us playing it at shows. And then like finally he figured it out. It was like, what the hell? And we're like, most people who listen to Beastie Boys, if you showed them Heart Attack Man, that what? That's not the Beastie Boys.
That's
I forgot about that. What do they know about drinking or anything else?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Love that part. And I always, Beastie Boys, I was always lukewarm on. But I remember saying to someone, I wish they would do more stuff like Heart Attack Man. And, they have another song on Ill Communication, which is also a punk rock tune. Near the beginning of the album, and I remember saying that, and someone was like, well, in the early days, this is what they did. This is what they played.
Yeah.
Also, you could check out DFL.
Yeah, exactly.
Who do this kind of thing. So anyway, a little side note there, but let's move on to What I See. Desperation begins. From the start, I see the end. Not right. I'm not right. You're not right. I've got to close my eyes. Another awesome bass intro. I love how Chuck just has this dirty bass sound. I love that sound.
It is just like a grungy, amazing tone where it just, again, to that raw power of the album where just everything just has that awesome, raw, grungy tone that just fits so perfect.
Dirty, muddy. I mean, Spot didn't like the muddiness, but I kind of feel like it fits tonally with... it's got a dark album cover. The lyrics are dark. It has to be that.
Yeah, you can't be having all these bright, fun, poppy sounding tones when they're screaming about what they're screaming about. And you got Henry going nuts playing them live. Like, it just, even if they recorded it like that, it's not going to, it wouldn't sound the same live. So.
Yeah, no way. This is a song about depression and how difficult it can be to want to press on. I want to live. I wish I was dead. It's a very dark song about that struggle where life is cold and feeling stuck and desperate.
Definitely. One of the ones that it always hit me, the I don't want to think, I'm stuck here and I know it, that line. Like just, this whole song again, like just teenage angst and depression, this whole album all the way through just runs right with you, or you're listening and you're like, this is me right now. What drew me into it, and kind of in punk rock in general, a lot of like that stuff, it just, that's a lot of our lives and why we all got into it in general is, it's a common kind absolutely. Of lifestyle that brings us all together into this angsty amazing music.
It was so much more relatable than like the grunge rock that was on the radio, like people singing about stuff that I had like no connection to at all. But when you put on these records, it's like you're hearing your feelings just being blasted back at you. And the thing that's worth noting is that Henry Rollins did not write any of these lyrics. And yet he's able to take them and deliver them in a way where they feel like they're his.
Yes. He definitely has the emotion with it where it's, he owns it.
And that's impressive. I mean, you really have to. I mean, if you're going to deliver them with that emotion, you have to completely believe in what the lyricist, mostly, Chuck or Greg or whoever wrote these songs. But to be able to give it that conviction and that honesty is just pretty amazing, I think.
Definitely.
Anyway, one of my favorite moments on this record is when Henry goes, "It's not right. I'm not right. You're not right." And like each time he makes that statement, it gets louder and more angry sounding.
Yes.
I just love that. It's like, it's like realizing in the moment, like, it's not right. I'm not right. They're not right.
It's just, it almost kind of like embodies Henry Rollins' personality in general and like the way he is, where like when his emotions, when he starts talking with something, it's kind of like him going through and then he's full on into it. Like, no, this is what's Like, it definitely is. It's wild to think that he didn't write that,
Yeah. And he's just amazing. He's an amazing speaker. I've seen him live twice. just doing his storytelling, and he will go for 2 hours straight with just this intensity. Never takes a sip of water. Just stands up there on the stage, knowing that like that stance he's got, and he just delivers these stories at like rapid fire pace, and it's like, dude. All right, let's take a look at TV Party.
Awesome song.
Yeah. Like Six Pack, this is just another jokey, making fun of lazy drunks, you know, stuck in front of the tube kind of song. You know, turn off your brain.
Yeah,
you know, drink.
Shitting on suburban society kind of thing.
Like, they're just mocking their surroundings. Like, you dopes.
Yeah, And it's just, like, the funness of the whole song and, like, the way it is just makes it that much better with the, like, dun, 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 dun. Like, it's just so, it's all almost, like, dancey, but it's just so good.
It is so good, and it's so funny because after Damaged, you don't get really many of these songs. I mean, you get a lot of like the taking stabs at society types of songs, but like these like kind of almost like, I don't want to say goofy. I mean, I think they meant it to be goofy.
It's like a goofy, fun riff with just goofy, fun lyrics shitting on suburban society, but it just works out so well where it's so catchy. Like, it's just one of those, like, I don't know, it's catchy, man.
And so I had read a quote where Greg Ginn was saying something to the effect of, you know, once Henry got in the band, we couldn't really do these jokey, goofy songs anymore. He just brought so much intensity and, it, you know, they just weren't going to do TV Party or Six Pack much anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
I love the part when Ron sings, "Hey, wait a minute, my TV doesn't work." And then the gang vocals respond, it's broken. Which I know, like, something like that's been done before, you know, where the background vocals don't just repeat what the singer says. They actually interact with the lead vocal. Like, I think that's a really funny thing.
Yeah, when
songs do that. But
the whole call and receive-y kind of feel of it, where it's not just, like, someone repeating, you know, they're not trying to harmonize or anything. It's a whole different thing, yeah.
The song and Six Pack were just kind of songs for me that are just kind of like, they're on side A, and I think they belong on side A, because once you get to side B, you don't hear anything like this. Side B to me seems like the bridge from where they were to where they're going. So we'll get to side B in a little bit, but I do want to move on to Thirsty and Miserable.
Yes.
You drink till you can't even see anymore.
Yeah, that's it's a good one.
A pretty self-explanatory song about drinking.
Like my mother or my brother needs a ride to the liquor store or something like that is the next one.
It's just intense. I mean, it's basically a song about, you know, drink and how it can destroy your life, you know, just being thirsty and miserable all the time, you know, miserable drunk.
I kind of feel like it almost like backs up on the TV Party of like just that dude that sits around and does nothing but get hammered and watch TV and they're fucking thirsty and miserable, like.
Right, it's like here's like the gist of it, but then here's the reality.
Exactly.
Like, you're a miserable cuss, you're awful, like your life is you're destroying your life. And
here's us funnily joking about it, but here's the next song. Like, no, for real, man, like this isn't good. This is not okay. You're thirsty and miserable, man. Like,
if you didn't get our message in the first song, here it is again.
Here's flat out us telling us this is you're thirsty and miserable, like.
It's brilliant. All right, the next song is Police Story. This is a song going up against the Police. The song takes the point of view of the youth who are harassed by police, especially those who don't fit in.
This one, another one, like, you know, I grew up skateboarding and punk rock, and us and police never got along. Like, you know, who knows where the feud started or what, but it runs deep and long, and there's just, you know, it's, yeah, they're just literally, you have the feeling like they hate you. Like, you know, you're just trying to skate in a parking lot and they're kicking you out of a fucking parking lot. Like, they can't even let you live. We can't win, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can't say that like all police are awful, because I've had experiences with a few great police officers, but I've had far more negative experiences with police officers that I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, is it the way I look? Is it what I'm doing? Is it where I am? Like, I have like horror stories about interacting with police officers and just walking away from the experience being like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's insane.
That was a horrible experience. Yeah. Literally being chased by a group of dudes in a pickup truck, finding a police car, running up to the car and being like, I'm being chased by these people, and having the guy be like, get the fuck out of here. Like, get out of here, kid. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's like, that's your job. Like, that's what you're supposed to be here for. No,
Stop these guys.
We're going to go bug teenagers that are listening to music in a parking lot and skateboarding instead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, you're right. It is a song where they feel like they're fighting a war. They just can't win against the police, whether it's because the police are always, you know, going to be, quote, on the right side and the youth are on the wrong side. It makes me think of, you know, like you said, like those skateboarders and groups of people who collect in a place, you know, who get turned away and harassed. I can't tell you how many shows, like house shows or like warehouse shows we set up where we were doing something wholesome. Yeah. We were just playing music. People were hanging out. There was no, you know, as much as we did all the bad stuff, you know, there were situations where there wasn't anything happening. Yeah. It was just people gathering and they didn't like it. It's too many people. What are they doing? What are they doing down there? What are those kids doing? And they would bust it up every time.
And even the stuff that we were doing that wasn't that great, 99% of it was harmless fun. Like, it's not like we're putting lives in danger or we're like burning down buildings or anything. Like, yeah, I might spray paint a wall. You can power wash it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like we were doing serious damage to anything. We're, you know, just being angsty teens. And I mean, I get, you know, some parts of it, but there were, I definitely same thing, like had way more experiences where we were, as far as I'm like, no, we weren't in the wrong. We're hanging out in a place, a public place, in a group somewhere, and like, you know, cops see spiky hair and leather jackets and skateboards and stuff, and they're, well, these kids are up to no good, and they come and give you shit, and it's, no, we're not doing nothing. Like,
I know, it's not like we're embezzling money, or like, you know, like these business people that are like are the real criminals.
Yeah, we're scrounging together change for 7-Eleven hot dogs and shit.
Yeah, get out of here, kids. But anyway, it's definitely a pretty straightforward song. And yeah, it's just one of those songs that a lot of the outcast youth can totally relate to. Because how many times have you been in a situation where you relied on a trusted, authoritative figure to help you out and they just turn their back on you? Again, saying that, knowing that there have been times where they have been very helpful. And, you know, I've met some wonderful, wonderful police officers in my day, but not enough.
Yeah, it's the minority for sure.
All right, let's close down side A with Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Gimme, 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 I need some more. Gimme, 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 go ask what for. 1, 2, 3, 4. Stand here like a loaded gun. Wait, you go hard.
This is an amazing song. I love this song.
It is a killer track. Just,
I love how this one also goes into a different tempo, separating like the chanting intro from the rest of the song. Again, it's just one of those like those switch ups that like kind of catches you off guard. It's really cool.
Yeah, and it's just a driving like killer song. What is sitting here like a neutron bomb ready to go off? Isn't that how it starts? Yeah. Or something like that. I got nothing to do but shoot my mouth off.
Get something for my head. If I keep on doing this, I'm going to end up dead. I mean, it's just like, yeah, it's like one of those songs. I mean, I think it's purposely vague, but I think the song can be about like really anything. It's when you feel you need something to counterbalance something else. So, you know, whether it's addiction or like needing medicine to regulate you or needing attention or, you know, something, you're trying to fill that void. You know, give me that thing that's going to fill.
Yeah. I mean, he says it right in there. I know the world's got problems, but I got problems of my own. Like, you know, you got to do it for yourself. Give me.
Yeah. That might have been an instant messenger away message at one point in my life.
Definitely.
Ooh, he's clever. But all right, man. Let's move on to side B of the record. It kicks off with Depression. Kicking off side B with a 20 or so second guitar feedback is just brilliant.
Excellent.
A single chord that rings out and you're like, okay. And then boom, off to the races with this one. This song was actually written by Morris in his time with the band, which is kind of cool. All four vocalists did a recording of this song during their own individual stints with the band, which is so interesting, you know, to have so many different vocal interpretations of such a very, very deep song. I mean, we're talking about depression here.
Yeah, definitely like just one of those like, especially like speaking for myself, like I, you know, had a lot of issues, especially when I found this album and like, you know, you're going through your teen years and figuring shit out. And I feel like everybody's depressed a little bit. It's definitely one of those songs when you were not having a good time, you'd throw on a pair of headphones or crank up in your car or something and just kind of sit there and rip out with it.
Absolutely. Cause it feels like that, like the music feels like that person that you can talk to or listen to. And, you know, I guess here's where we tackle depression. Like so many people, I have struggled with bouts of depression myself. And so I've related to the song many times over the years. I mean, with lines like, everybody just get away, I'm going to boil over inside today. They say things are going to get better. All I know is they fucking better. It's just such a cry of desperation in one's thinking, you know?
Definitely.
Sending people away, closing yourself off from those around you without really being able to explain why, feeling like things are going to boil over. Such a great image. It's just a deeply challenging way to go about your day. And like you said, being able to throw on a song like this, you know, and listen to that rather than listening to people say, oh, things will get better, you'll be okay. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Classic.
Now, sometimes depression's just got a hold of you, you know.
Which I feel like is a good segue into Room 13. Because in this one, the standout line is, keep me alive.
Yeah, yes. You can do it. Yeah, again, these two, like, just like kind of TV Party and Thirsty and Miserable. Like these two kind of flow into each other of like the kind of two sides of it.
Yeah, different angles. It's definitely a song about needing support, needing someone to help with life's challenges. I rely on your judgment, got none of my own. One line that always makes me raise my eyebrow, though, is where he says, keep me alive, only you can do it. If not, you'll die too, and I'll see to it. He's like threatening someone into helping him. Like, you better help me. I always thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I never even really thought of that, but yeah.
You know, I just love how the chords in the song descend as Rollins is singing and, you know, the needing to belong part. And it's just a good contrast to the wild verses which bounce between two chords and the sharp single note guitar riffs. One of the things that I always love about Black Flag music is those seemingly pointless guitar parts that are very meaningful. Like they're just, it's like, okay, what was that? Jen was a master of throwing that stuff in there. Like almost like drum fills, you know, it's like just a random guitar fill. All right. The next song is Damage 2. A Like Room 13, the song goes between two main parts, the driving chord-heavy parts, and then the parts where Jin is just like wailing away. And the cool thing is, though the parts are different in tone, the drums just keep driving forward, which I think is really cool. They don't change. Even though like the guitars and the rhythms are doing some crazy stuff, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's just holding it steady and it kind of, it makes it very cool. As a drummer, I can appreciate that. sometimes you just want to jump around and follow guitar and stuff like that. So like, just keep that steady drive throughout it with everything else going on. It's definitely pretty killer.
Do you feel like you almost have to just not listen to it? Like not listen to the guitar, just like keep doing what you're doing and not listen to it. Cause yeah, I mean, you can fall into going with what's happening. I mean, how often does that happen when we're practicing with our bands and like the tempo will start to speed up or slow down and everybody does it together because you're playing off of each other.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely, you know, that I forgot the word for it, but like when drummers get amped, like I do it, my drummer and Ape does it, like, There's nothing you can do. We just start going fast and like to be able to keep that steadiness, even when you're trying to go with stuff like that, like kind of a testament to a little bit of skill, honestly, because like it's real easy to get lost in the music. I mean, that's what we're all trying to do in the long run is get lost in the music. So that's pretty sweet.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I had mentioned earlier that you and I were bandmates for a month. I'm talking about the time where we did that Operation Ivy cover set. And I just remember like, I don't think we had a single practice where we got through all the songs neatly. And yet when we did the show, I felt like everything went great.
Same thing. Like some of those like start and stop things where we were kind of at practice.
We never hit them at practice.
It just fucking pulled them off. Just perfect. Like where you're like, God damn. All right. And it's just, it's just that you got to feel it and be in it. And like, just that live environment where you're just, it just works.
It's pretty amazing.
Like Gonna Find You, I think we realistically only practiced that song like twice and we banged it out.
Did we? I don't know, man. Somehow pulled it off. Getting back to this song, I don't know really what this one's about. I might be way off, but it seems to me it's about not really knowing what you want, you know, being confused. I think he says, I'm confused, don't feel a thing, etc. But at the same time, like knowing you don't want to be like something else. So not knowing what you want, but knowing what you don't want.
Yeah. Like it's almost like, I'm mad that I'm depressed. Like why am I fucking depressed right now? This is stupid. Problems are stupid. You know, like, you know, you're mad at depression kind of thing. That's kind of how I feel it. Like, you know, you got all these scars like he's talking about and you're confused and like your emotions are bruised and like, it's angst at depression. That's kind of how I see this song, like which damaged works, because, you know, that kind of you're a damaged person and you're mad that you're damaged kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's move on to No More. I won't believe that this is all. Like a few other songs on the record, this song just starts off with that bass, you know? It's got that single bass notes. But this is a little different because it's just like, you know, boom, boom. And then the drums come in and it just like builds up. And this goes on for like over a minute, you know? It actually makes up like half the song. It's just this slow build up. But then when the vocals kick in, it's just this frantic blast to the end.
Yes.
It's almost like they had like another 30 second song and they're like, oh, we got to make this longer. What can we do? Yeah. How about if we do this intro?
but it works. It kind of, it's just those buildups into that frantic, like it kind of pulls you in and then sets you off to blast off with them.
I think this maybe designed for the live show.
And like this is another, like, you know, in staying with the same theme of like, you know, I mean, the album's called Damage, so I guess it is kind of theme behind it of like, just, you know, you're depressed, you don't, you know, you don't want to know more, like you're trying to get past it and you don't want to find a place and, you know, you're not, what is it, like, I'm not happy, I'm not free, living paycheck to paycheck. Like, it's just
one
of those, like, you know, I don't know, like, kind of feel like it's, I don't even know how to explain it, but yeah, just one of those, just fed up.
Seems to me
fed up songs.
Yeah,
that's
like, fed up, or like feeling unfulfilled, like nothing to be excited about. You know, chained to a job. In the chorus, it becomes like a cry for action, though, to no longer accept this way of life. So it's like, here's how it is, and here's how terrible it is. But at the same time, being like, but no more. You know, we gotta push past this, like, unfulfilling way of life that we're leaving.
Yeah.
The next song is Padded Cell. This song has the amazing line, "Straight jacket minds in line to be old." And I just love that line. Like, what?
Good one.
What better line just captures, like, the status quo? Like, these people who live these top layer lives, they're just shuffling through. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know? This is the song, of course, where they go, "Maniacs."
Yeah. CNN, maniacs.
But, you know, not a whole lot to say on this one. I just kind of feel like it just kind of sums up a lot of the themes that we've discussed already.
Yeah.
There is one line that I thought was interesting, and I kind of wanted to dig into that a little bit. I don't know if I'm maybe searching here, but it's Walden 2, but the flower's dead. And I'm wondering if this is a nod to the book Walden by Henry David Thoreau. It's a book about living in natural surroundings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as the author did. And I kind of feel like, all right, so maybe, you know, to set yourself apart from the mundane, you know, set yourself apart from this way of life that people are living around you, and be like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm going to go do this other thing, my thing, or, you know, if something that's fulfilling.
Yeah.
So to go back to the previous song, you know.
but the prettiness behind it is dead kind of thing. Like,
Yeah.
That's definitely one. Like, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know who wrote it, but I kind of feel like it might be a thing. Like, it's just one of those like just different metaphor lyrics, like kind of hidden meaning stuff, where it's kind of, I didn't even notice that it was spelt, it's Walden, like I was walled in, like as in walls around you, and I did not know that it's like Walden, like Walden Pond. Yeah.
Maybe it is, and when I looked it up on the internet, the lyrics were wrong, and here I've gone off on this crazy... I'll have to look at the... I don't know if the lyrics are in the record here, but I'll have to double-check.
Yeah. I wonder.
Hey, but is it gin or is it gin? I've been saying gin.
I honestly don't know. Maybe just because I drink, and it's spelled... And, you know, the drink is gin, so that's probably why I say
with one
gin.
N.
But I feel like it is Ginn. I feel like it is Greg Ginn. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Like, if I've
well,
like
here on Talking Records, we pronounce just about everything wrong. So
yeah, it's bad.
It was actually a long-standing joke in my band, No Intention. Like, I used to always pronounce things wrong, and it drove my bassist nuts. So one night we were in a hotel room, and I was reading from the Bible, and I was purposely pronouncing everything wrong, and I could just see him boiling over. But anyway, back to the record. Let's move on to Life of Pain.
Life's misery's pain runs deep. Does it matter that anybody cares? Can there be another outlet? Nobody gets close. Nobody dares.
I think the intro is cool on this one. It's a cool instrumental. But then the song kicks in. And I feel like the two sections don't really connect. Again, kind of like the other one we were talking about. It's like they had this short punk rock song, and they're like, okay, let's add something to the beginning of this, make it a little longer, make it a little bit more interesting. Because I think the intro is cool, but it never really comes back.
Yeah.
This seems to me, like a lot of the songs on this record, to be about self-destruction, self-harm even. This song is not self-reflection, but a look at someone else.
Yeah, like it's almost like...
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, like someone must have had a friend going through something, and like a song of like, man, look what you're doing. Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
you're self-destructing yourself. You're beating yourself down.
Yeah, not being able to stand watching somebody self-destruct.
Yeah, exactly.
I can understand your problems, and I can even figure out the reasons why, but I can't help the way I feel. I can't accept what I see, and I just can't stand watching you and then self-destruct. Yeah, so definitely a song that fits very well on this record, but I look at someone else instead of a look inward, which I think is kind of cool. All right, and here we go. So now we're going to take a look at Damaged One. I don't know if we can describe this song as anything but just chaos.
Yeah. I was saying, this is a tough one. It's one where, like, you know, I say it's an awesome album cover to cover, but this one's tough sometimes.
You have to be in the mood for Damaged One.
Yeah.
But if you're in the mood for it, man, it hits, because it's just like crazy. This song is crazy.
And I mean, it's for punk rock and not only Black Flag, like, even with their, it's a long, like, I feel like it's like almost like 5 minutes. I don't know. Actually, let me see. I got the thing on my phone. 3 minutes, 51 seconds. It's a long one.
It's a long 3 minutes and 51 seconds. Not because I don't like it, but I mean, so here you can already see that they're starting to, like, kind of show their evolution, you know, beyond the standard hardcore punk formula. I mean, there's just this guitar that seems completely and deliberately just off, like maybe even out of tune. I don't even know. And you've got Rollins, who's like semi-coherently just screaming and yelling the lyrics out over this music. And there's times where, like, he's growling.
Yeah, I was just saying, I don't even know, like, my life is in there. Like, I couldn't even sing a lot of the lyrics in this song. Like, I feel like, you know, you just got some jumbled shouted phrases.
Yeah,
but it's still it's a good song.
Yeah, it's a good song. I mean, I feel like the vocal session was probably rather violent, but, you know,
yeah, definitely.
What we get is just this, like, slow and drudging and just, like, really interesting song to listen to. And I feel like it's just emotion in almost, like, performance art in a way. Like, it's, I mean, you can't listen to the song and not picture just, like, the anguish and anger and, like, huddled, like, you know, the tight, you know, huddled over feeling. You're picturing Rollins in the studio just, like, you know, full emotion, like screaming and yelling. And I think it goes well with the theme because it's about, like, bullying. It's about, like, victims and their perspectives, both the bully and the victim.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Rollins, as we know, emerged from a very abusive home. And though he didn't write the song, he definitely adds his personal touch to it.
Yeah, like, he's definitely vocal delivery. Feeling it. It's a deep one. Like, I'm scrolling through some of the lyrics right now. And yeah, I've never even, like, you know, it's one of those where you're just kind of listening and it's so chaotic, you're almost not paying attention listening to, like the whole story behind it. But yeah, goddamn.
It's very repetitive in a way. But, like, yeah, I followed along with it recently and I was just like, oh, wow. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's actually a lot to this. I mean, prior to doing this podcast, I really never thought about the lyrics to this song, because when you listen to the song, the lyrics, I don't really even think are as front and center as just the what this song does to you.
Just
when you,
the
when
music
you hear it.
And the vibe of it itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, yeah, and I don't really have much more to say on Damaged One. It's an adventure. So I think, you know, great record. It also has this very iconic album cover. So let's talk about the album art for a moment. It's definitely memorable. You've got this picture of Henry Rollins kind of, like, punching himself. He's punching a mirror.
Yeah, yes.
You know, and, like, you can see his face beyond, like, the cracks of the shattered glass. And it's just, like, kind of a crazy cover, but it goes perfectly with this album of, like, you know, just torment and pain and, yeah, like, self-loathing at times.
It definitely fits well with the, like, fighting who you are and depression and all that stuff and what society is, like, you know, kind of punching it in the face in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And like, I honestly, the tones of it too, like the fact that they did like that red hue, like just makes it like, or I don't know if that's just my specific copy of the vinyl. I don't know if mine is original. Honestly, I got it years ago, but it's got like a, like almost like it's, you know, sepia's like that orangish hue. Like it's, instead of being sepia, it's like, I feel like it's more of a red hue. And it fits with, like, you know, because the word lettering and everything is in red, and it's just got, I don't know, just a sick looking cover. Something that stands out.
Your pressing thing, because
mine is not that white. Mine, I wish I was upstairs. Mine has like a red hue to it.
And I've seen that. Yeah,
I wonder what pressing mine is now.
Yeah, yeah, go find out. Mine is definitely not an original press. I mean, mine, I picked this up. Probably, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, but it says SST. There's no mention of MCA anywhere on here. So it's obviously a, you know, beyond that debacle press. It's SST exclusively. But yeah, mine's just grayscale and red. Real quick, according to Rollins in the book Turned On, the cover art taken by punk photographer Ed Culver features Rollins putting his fist through a mirror. The effect was made by cracking the mirror with a hammer, while the blood, air quotes, on Rollins' wrist is a mixture of red ink and coffee.
Nice.
Which I thought was cool. But yeah, pretty cool record cover, pretty cool back. It's just the shattered glass on the back with the song titles, the red bars in the top.
But
not much to it.
It's definitely an iconic fucking record cover. Like, one of those, like, I mean, not even. I'll say, like, all the other ones, they have awesome art. Like, I love the, like, My War and Slip It In and, like, whatever. I don't know who did the art for those, but I love that. And, like, a lot of the first 4 years, like, all that. But just that image, just, it just fits so well with the album. Like, and again, like, I originally got it on CD. And, like, even just getting the CD, you're like, you know, I'd only heard a couple of songs off it, but you see it and you're like, this looks badass. You know, this is going to be good.
Definitely. It definitely looks like you're intrigued by it. You're like, okay, what's happening here? In closing, according to Barney Hoskins in NME Magazine, Damaged is scorching and unbridled and causes riots of the mind. It is pure aggression, pure pain, pure electricity. Its love songs are battle cries. Its hate songs, pleas for toleration. Damage says our lives seem to be set to auto-destruct, but if we only dared, we might find another way out. And like you said at the top, and I'll say it too, like, this is a record that I hear a lot of feelings in, a lot of my own feelings. I recognize a lot of myself in this. Not always. I mean, some of this record goes pretty dark at times, but at least you have like an honest work of art here that you can relate to and listen to and understand and say, oh, I've been there, or I know what that person's feeling. This has always been a record that I've loved. I have so many songs on here that I'll throw on workout mixes, or, like, you know, if I need to get pumped up before coming out as a wrestler or whatever, I'll put on some of these. But great record. Awesome record. Love it a lot.
All around amazing record. Like, honestly, shaped a lot of my teenagehood and the band I played in back then. Like, we were all huge Black Flag fans. Like, that was one of my first couple tattoos. I got the Black Flag bars, like all us other punk kids, you know. And just an amazing record that just holds up so well. And, like, even to this day, like, you know, same, you can't really, some of the songs not so much you're feeling as you were when you were younger, but it's still, it's like a reflection of that time. And it's just, I fucking love the record. Also, sorry that I swear like a sailor all the time.
Oh, it's all good. This is not a family restaurant, so. Well, Adam, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and talking about Black Flag Damage. This was a lot of fun, man.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on.
I'd like to thank Krista Makes from Less Than Jape for the theme music. I would like to thank all of you for tuning into Talking Records. It's a blast to dive into these fantastic records, chat about the songs, and try to gather up all the information we possibly can and stick it in this 1-hour-long podcast. Check us out on the socials. Say hello. Suggest albums. Tell us how you got into Black Flag. Tell us how you found Damaged.
Awesome.
All right, man. Take care. It was good talking with you.
You as well. You too, man. Have a good one.